Well, it's time for many of you to head back to school. So I thought this might be a good moment to remind you that college is a complete waste of time, sapping years from your life for no reason, and plunging you into debt while giving you nothing in return. In order to do that, I turned to a story from Peter DeBrosca at LoanConservative.com. The story is called The Craziest College Courses Offered This Year. Apparently, these are all real. At Oberlin College, you can waste the precious moments of your only life on Earth by taking a course called How to Win a Beauty Pageant, Race, Gender, Culture, and U.S. National Identity. According to the Oberlin syllabus, the course will examine U.S. beauty pageants in order to analyze pageantry as a, quote, unique site for the interplay of race, gender, class, sexuality, and nation, unquote. Hopefully, there'll also be some pictures of hot chicks with big bazungas in skimpy bathing suits, so the guys will have something to look at while they're having unrecoverable seconds of their existence sucked away by this useless nothingness. At the Rhode Island School of Design, you can careen helplessly toward death while taking a course called Transracial Bodies, Transracial Selves. This is in the Literary Arts Department, so you can bet the best writers at RISD composed the syllabus course description, which reads, quote, "The whole rainbow of racial identification is still construed as biologically inescapable and inevitable. But this cultural reaction is contrary to the everyday experience that actually finds racial identification as a process that is always transracial. Declaring ourselves racially, we all cross restricted zones in becoming ourselves," unquote. Wow, you can bet when you're lying on your deathbed, you'll want the time you spent in that class back for sure. At Swarthmore College, you can take a class called Queering God. Now, that may sound like moronic or even psychopathic garbage and a waste of your time and money, but when you go out into the real world for a job interview, Queering God is what they're going to want to know about, especially if you're applying for a job at the Queering God Factory. Here's the actual description from the Swarthmore syllabus, so help me, Queering God. Quote, "The God of the Bible and later Jewish and Christian literature is distinctively masculine, definitely male. Or is he? If we can point out places in traditional writings where God is nurturing, forgiving, and loving, does that mean that God is feminine or female? This course examines feminist and queer writings about God, explores the tensions between feminist and queer theology, and seeks to stretch the limits of gendering and sexing the divine," unquote. As added bonuses, those who take the course will be able to gather between lectures with the teaching assistants in order to be struck by lightning and consigned to the tortures of hell forever. So, as you head back to school this autumn, just remember, you only live once, and this is what you're doing with your time. Basically, it sucks to be you. Trigger warning, I'm Andrew Klavan, and this is The Andrew Klavan Show.
I feel hunky-dunky, life is tickety-boo. Birds are winging, also singing, hunky-dunky-dee-doo. Ship-shaped, ipsy-topsy, the world is zippity-zing. It's a wonderful day, hurrah, hooray, it makes me want to sing. Oh, hurrah, hooray. Oh, hooray, hooray.
All right. You know, it's already Thursday. I'm terrified of this Klavanless weekend. Last weekend, we lost Texas. I'm afraid the entire country is just going to sink away. But we have the late John Nolte is with us today. He's going to explain himself and why he left the Daily Wire to go back to Breitbart. We will talk to him. I had a quick conversation with him last night, but I'll be ready to berate him here live and in person. What else? I've been thinking about the mailbag. Yesterday we had the mailbag. It was a great mailbag. And somebody asked the question, how do you balance work and life? And I said, wake up earlier. And then I was at home last night. I was thinking, that's probably not what anybody else would have said. Everybody else would have said, take time in your day to call home. You know, go right into the Klavan Show. It's get out of bed, you lazy son of a... this is why our mailbag actually solves your problems instead of, just giving you stupid advice that doesn't work. Nolte, we're going to stay on Facebook and YouTube so you can watch Nolte because he's worth watching. But normally we have to cut you off, so it's a good reason to subscribe, and then you can watch the whole thing on thedailywire.com. You can always hear everything on thedailywire.com, but if you want to watch the video, you got to subscribe. It's a lousy 10 bucks a month. You get great advice like I just gave you to get your backside out of bed instead of lolling around like this. And if you also we translate everything if you subscribe. If you subscribe for a year, it's only 100 lousy bucks. And you get the Leftist Tears mug, which officially does not have Steven Crowder's name on it. That's what makes it so good. Plus, it comes with a full supply of Leftist Tears, which refills every time Donald Trump makes a speech. So here's what I want you to do to begin the show. Speaking of giving you good advice, go into the mirror. Look at yourself in the mirror. If you're a guy, especially, go look at yourself in the mirror. I know, right? I mean, it's a disaster. But... that's because you're dressing yourself. What you want to do is you want to go to 5'4", because you think, oh my gosh, I really can't look like the guys in commercials. I really can't look good because it costs too much. But it doesn't with 5'4". What they do is each month they send you a curated box of 2 to 3 items that are hand-packed, picked to match the current season in your style. So you fill out a form and they tell you, you know, tell them what you like. And then in each season, each month, they give you 2 to 3 items. They've been helping people, guys, do this for over 15 years. They've shipped to over 100,000 men every month, and they know what they're doing, so you don't have to. It's also inexpensive. You get about $120 worth of clothes for just $60 a month. You can pause. Yeah, I know. It's a good deal. You can pause or cancel anytime. And as a 5'4 club member, you'll also receive up to 50% off items in their inline online shop and access to exclusive members only items, free shipping and size exchanges. Here's what you do. You go to 54club.com right now and enter the promo code Klavan, which is spelled K-L-A-V-A-N. They will give you 50% off your first month's package, plus a free pair of sunglasses. J.A. is here today running the board. I gave you those sunglasses. Really beautiful, right? Yeah. And I gave them to him because he's still a flyer. I have given up aviations. He's still a flyer. They're aviation glasses. 50% off your first package at 54 Club, spelled F-I-V-E-F-O-U-R, club.com, promo code Klavan 54. Club.com, promo code Klavan, K-L-A-V-A-N. So yesterday we went off on the press. I felt bad. Yes. Those nice people in the press. But we got a piece of fan art from Brian Logan, a guy who was watching the show, and he sent in this Klavan versus the leftist media. And I see he did Jim Acosta there. That's I love the picture of the press. This slavering lizard of death. You know, which is pretty close. It's pretty close to the truth. You know, I have a saying, and this is true, because I see what some of the comments people make, especially when I'm doing my open and I'm kidding around, and people send in these comments, why is he laughing when everything is terrible? Why is he joking around? And I always say, really, when you think about it properly, everything is funny except other people's pain. Everything is funny except other people's pain. Well, happily, because we have a press, there's not everybody feels that way. Our press feels that other people's pain is funny. They are really ready to make fun of people who are suffering, especially if they're ordinary, God-loving Americans, because they know that they are so much superior to ordinary guys. I mean, first we'll take a look at this Charlie Hebdo thing. I just want to put this out there. They put out a cartoon about the hurricane and now a tropical storm in Texas. It says God exists in French, and it shows Nazi flags and, you know, hands giving the Heil salute sinking into the flood of Texas. So that's proof that God exists, that they're killing people, that people are dying in Texas. Ha ha ha. These leftists are so funny. You know, they just, you know, I really admire their open mind, because I stop making jokes when other people are in pain, but they keep on going. You have to admire that. But here's the one that really got me. This is the one where this is from Politico, right? They tweeted this. And I really do want to talk about this for a couple of minutes, because it's worth it. They tweeted this and then they erased it. They deleted it. And it shows, if you're not watching, if you're listening, it shows a Texan being rescued by a chopper. He has got a flag that says, don't tread on me. He's wearing a big cowboy hat. He's a big fat guy wearing a Confederate flag. I don't think Texas was actually in the Confederacy, but that doesn't matter. And as the chopper is taking him away, he's shouting, "Angels sent by God," and the rescuer saying, or actually it's the Coast Guard sent by the government. And he's on a house rescuing somebody with a Texas flag that says secede. I think this is actually a wonderful cartoon. This tells you everything you need to know about the people who made the cartoon. This is Politico, but it could be CNN, it could be the New York Times, it could be any damn one of them. They are so superior to the people who are rescuing each other, helping each other, reaching out for each other. They know that this is a divided country where people hate each other because of race. They know that Southerners and people who live outside of LA and New York are terrible, you know, people who hate each other and who never are friendly outside of their own race and their own philosophy. Since they're telling jokes about people suffering, let me tell a joke about people suffering. I have a joke about people suffering. Some of you may have heard this joke before. I'll tell it briefly, but it's worth telling. There's a flood, and a kind of super pious, self-righteous pastor is in his house as the floodwaters rise. And as the floodwaters rise, they rescue some neighbors come by in a rowboat, and they shout to him, Pastor, get in the rowboat. And the pastor says, "Never mind, my friends, God will take care of me." And the waters continue to rise. And so he climbs up to the second story. And while he's on the second story, another rowboat comes with his neighbors. And they shout, Pastor, get in the rowboat. And he says, "No need, my friends, God will take care of me." And the waters continue to rise. He climbs up on the roof and a helicopter comes over. And the guys shout from the helicopter, "Get it, you know, Pastor, climb up the rope, get in the helicopter." He says, no need. God will take care of me. Floodwaters rise. The helicopter goes away. The floodwaters rise, and he drowns. He opens his eyes, and he's at the pearly gates, and there's this enormous throne engulfed with a ball of inconceivable light that he can barely see through it. And the pastor turns to this ball of light in the throne, and he says, Father, why did you forsake me? And a voice comes out of the ball of light and says, "Forsake you? Two rowboats and a helicopter." So, now, I know it kills a joke to explain it, but I have to point out that these people who are making fun when the Texan says angels sent by God, the point of that joke is that these people helping each other in Texas, these ordinary people that you guys despise so much, and I call them ordinary not because they're ordinary, I call them ordinary because there's so damn many of them. I call them ordinary because they're all across America. They're not just in Texas and Louisiana. They're all in all these places, everywhere, these places that you so despise and whose president they elect, the president they elected you so despise. All these people helping each other are the face of God. See, you know, it's not the government. It's not anything. It is the face of God when people do this to each other. This is the image of God, and they know it. You think they're fools because people are rescuing them instead of some beam of light coming down, but they know because Jesus told them so. They know that there are two commandments. One is love God, and the other, says Jesus, is related to this, is love your neighbor as yourself. And why is it related? Because we're made in the image of God, and this is the image of God that you're seeing. And this God that you hate him so much because he elevates the world beyond yourself, and you hate these people so much because in what you consider their simplicity, what you consider their lack of sophistication, they're better than you are. And they're showing it every day while you're slathering with this hate about Donald Trump. You just can't get over the fact that you lost the damn election. You cannot get over it. You're just going to send hate at these people as they're suffering. It is amazing. Only the press, only Politico, only the left could treat people like this. You can always find on Twitter, you can always find some jerk saying some nasty thing, and that makes the world look like a worse place than it actually is. But these are central places, you know, that, like, Politico is a big website. This is a central place where this is, for a moment, they revealed what they're really thinking. And so the question is, is America watching? Are the voters watching? Is this going to be a turning point? Is Hurricane Harvey going to be a turning point for Trump and this administration and for this country, which has been roiled since the election? And before we answer that question, we have to talk about underwear, because we really can't talk about this question unless we first know about underwear. That is the thing, you know, because life has no meaning if you're not wearing good underwear. And MeUndies will sell you some of the best underwear. It's really, first of all,
It looks really good. They have all kinds of designs. Go on their website. You'll see. It's MeUndies.com. You'll see that they keep restoring. They'll take requests, and they'll create underwear to go with it. And it's like three times softer than cotton, the stuff they use. You know what I've been using it for? I've been using it to hike. I hike because it's so comfortable. And if you're a guy, it has extra supports and all this stuff. Plus, it's made from some crazy, I can't remember, is it an Austrian tree or something it naturally cuts down on odor, which is why those Austrians can sneak up on you, because you can't smell them coming. That's the thing. Plus, it comes with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. They guarantee you will love your undies or your money back. Right now, MeUndies has an exclusive offer just for my listeners. You get 20% off your first pair and free shipping. And MeUndies is so sure you'll love their underwear, they even offer 100% satisfaction guarantee. You order a pair, you don't love it, you get a full refund. There's a no-brainer to try it. 20% off, free shipping, 100% satisfaction guarantee, and they really are incredibly comfortable and well-made. To get this 20% off and free shipping and the guarantee, and get the best and softest underwear you'll ever own, go to MeUndies.com/Klavan. And once again, because it's hard to spell, it's K-L-A-V-A-N. That's MeUndies.com/Klavan, K-L-A-V-A-N. This is a limited time offer. So what are you waiting for? Start wearing the best underwear of your life. Go to MeUndies.com, Klavan, right now. My friend Roger Simon over at PJ Media has a piece called "Harvey Will Be a Turning Point of the Trump Presidency." And he says, "Has Harvey shaken America seriously enough to diminish the cold civil war that has overtaken our country? Has it made our divisions seem at least a tiny bit more trivial? No doubt a hardcore of hate-filled bozos drunk on some witless ideology will always be with us. There's still a market for Guy Fawkes masks for adjunct junior college professors to pretend they're violent anarchist revolutionaries out of some Dostoevsky novel they never finished. Nevertheless, a flood of Noah-like proportions has a way of focusing the mind, at least for some, maybe even most of us, and Donald Trump has clearly done well thus far in his capacity of crisis manager-in-chief. It seems the presidential activity he was born for, the one most akin to running a large hotel construction job or renovating an historic ice skating rink." And that's right. That is absolutely true. This is what Trump loves to do. He likes to build stuff. He likes to fix stuff. He wants you to look at him. You know, it seems to me possible. How long can these people stew in their own hate before they start to notice that people are going to hate them back? You know, the other day, Tuesday, I think it was, Dianne Feinstein, one of the most liberal senators from this liberal state, California, was talking to liberals in San Francisco at the Commonwealth Club. And it sounded like I heard the moderator, the person talking to her, reading a question, sounded like a question from the audience. And the audience said, "When will the Republicans turn on Trump and impeach him and reject him?" And everybody's cheering and all this stuff. And she said, Dianne Feinstein said, "You know, we've done impeachment. It's not so much fun." And then she said this.
"Look, this man is going to be president most likely for the rest of this term. I just hope he has the ability to learn and to change. And if he does, he can be a good president. And that's my hope. I have my own personal feelings about it." Yeah, I understand how you feel. I understand how you feel.
I understand how you feel because the people are shocked. They are shocked. And later, she issued a clarification because she sensed a little bit of like political problems there. So she sent a clarification. "During this tumultuous time, I'm working to protect the progress we've made and find a way to get things done for Californians during a period of total Republican control. I've been strongly critical of President Trump when I disagree on policy and with his behavior. Most recently, I was appalled by his comments in response to Charlottesville and the pardon of Sheriff Joe Arpaio. President Trump said that there were very fine people in a crowd chanting, 'Jews will not replace us. There's nothing fine about white supremacists, Nazis, the KKK.'" She couldn't get away with that if the press weren't lying about it. He didn't say that. It certainly was not what he was intending to say. Anyway, she goes on, "While I'm under no illusion that it's likely to happen, I will continue to oppose his policies. I want President Trump to change for the good of the country." But, you know, it was a moment. She let down her guard for a moment. You know, they are senators. They do want to pass laws. Trump is out there now pushing a tax code change, tax reform, which would be the first tax reform since, I mean, 30 years. It's been 30 years since they reformed this. There was just a story on Drudge about how people are spending more on their taxes than on food and lodging. It's ridiculous. So there is this opportunity to start to act in a bipartisan, at least a somewhat bipartisan way, if Trump can keep the discipline. Let's bring on Nolte. Have we got Nolte? The late John Nolte, the former John Nolte, like the Nolte, there he is, the once in future John Nolte. You deserted us. You deserted us, Nolte.
Now, didn't I tell you you never leave the family? What's wrong?
Anyway, Nolte, just for those of you who don't know, he left the Daily Wire, where we loved him, and went back to Breitbart, where they love him even more. I think they really do love you over there. And I have to admit, I still haven't forgiven you for leaving L.A., so I want you to know I'm really ticked off now. But I have to admit, I went over and looked there, and I thought, you know, there's something. It is your home, basically. What was it? What was it that turned your mind?
I think it was just that the Daily Wire is a great site, and I loved writing for the Daily Wire, and I love Ben and Jeremy. They're just two of the best guys you'll ever meet in this business, and they're two of the best employers you'll ever have in this business. But they're two different sites. They both fight in their own way, but I just felt that it was a better fit for my sort of belligerent skill set. back at Breitbart. And there's a lot of history there, too. I mean, I was there at the beginning, and I was there for almost 8 years. So, you know, it's just, it's one of those things where you try different things, but with the future of your country at stake, you know, you got to go to where you think you can, you know, do the best, have the most effect you can, if any. And I'm not saying the Daily Wire doesn't have an effect. There's no question that Ben Shapiro is a warrior when it comes to free speech. And I think what the Daily Wire does in fighting for traditional values, Judeo-Christian values, is extraordinary. But, you know, what I do is just something different. And I just think it fit better over there. And those, you know, the Daily Wire was very good to me. I think I was very good to them. And I wish those guys nothing but the best. And they're going to get links from me. And I'll always be their friend.
You know,
and a consumer site as well.
You know, I have to say, I mean, first of all, I really do second. I know we've talked about this privately, so I know that you're not just saying it, and you know I'm not just saying it. This is an amazing place to work, the Daily Wire, and it is because, you know, Shapiro, he'll kill me if I let the public know, but he's actually a great guy, and so is Jeremy. And Jeremy really does, he hires some of the best people. This is an amazing place to work. But what we're really talking about, I mean, just to boil it down, we're talking about Donald Trump, I think. You know, I mean, the Breitbart site has been have been Trump warriors. And I think it's fair to say that while we generally are in support of Trump when he is conservative, and, you know, I personally love some of the stuff he's doing with the news media. I mean, that stuff just makes me laugh out loud. But we have not, we stick to what we feel are our principles, each one of us, some a little different, but we stick to that and we'll call Trump out, whereas the Breitbart site really fights for him, doesn't it? Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, but, you know, I've also seen Breitbart turn against him. I mean, if you look at the site right now, no one's very happy about the people he's surrounding him with. They're not very happy about a number of things that are going on in foreign policy, which is something I'm not that familiar with. But I think that the Breitbart site is going to fight for national populism. I think that's where their fight is. And my fight is basically just against the media. And Breitbart is a potent site to fight the media with.
Yeah.
And like, I just published a piece where I put up a score that in the rap sheet of beating up journalists, Antifa is 10 and Trump supporters, despite the media narratives, is 0. Huh. And I just think that a piece like that, if I were to write a piece about the abortion, I think that that piece would be much stronger at the Daily Wire. But a piece like that about Antifa, I think, is much stronger at Breitbart, just because one's the Army and the other one's the Navy.
All right. Well, that's fair enough. Well, let's talk for a minute about the media. I mean, this is basically the thing that drives you crazy, and it does me too. Are we overstating the effect of the media? I mean, we both. I mean, I love it when Trump goes off like Godzilla on the media, and it looks like, you know, the scene in Godzilla where he's destroying Tokyo. I love that stuff. Are they as big an enemy as we think they are, or are we exaggerating that?
I think that the media is not as strong as they were. I think that the election of Donald Trump proved that the media does not have the moral authority or the sway with public opinion as they once did. So they're not as strong as, and they're losing their, it's a suicide by discrediting themselves. They're losing their power every day. But what the media is doing is shifting its tactics, and it's becoming a much more militant and violent organization. The media, Rush Limbaugh's right, the media has taken over. The media has told the Democrats, hold my beer, we'll take care of this. They've taken over the left. They now run the left. The Democrat, you know, we don't hear from Nancy Pelosi or Charles Schumer anymore. The other thing that the media has done is twofold. They've sort of taken in Antifa, this left-wing terrorist group that goes around beating up everyone on the right and white supremacists. They, you know, one of the best undercover stories, I think, of the whole Charlottesville thing is that the day after Charlottesville, Antifa was in Seattle beating up Trump supporters. And the media covers for them. The media rationalizes them. The media compares them to D-Day. You had Chuck Todd interview a guy, I think twice, yep, who was trying to, and Chuck Todd treated him seriously. I mean, Chuck Todd, for crying out loud, the guy that took over for Tim Russert, is treating a guy seriously who's saying that you need to meet peaceful protesters who are white nationalists with violence, that's okay. And that's not okay. The great equalizer, if you want to become a Nazi, I don't care who you are, I don't care if you're Mother Teresa, hit someone. Once you start violence, you're no better than a Nazi. So the media has taken on Antifa as their own personal little brown shirt army that runs around the country beating up everyone, just like Hitler's brown shirts did, who don't toe the political line. The second thing that the media is starting to do is use large corporations, these mega corporations, especially Facebook, especially Twitter. They're redefining hate speech to mean if you're tough on the border or if you disagree with same-sex marriage. And you're going to see a very strong censorship crusade under the guise of hate speech, where we're already seeing it, where on Facebook and on Twitter, you're removed. You're completely cut off from the world, and the world is the internet now. These corporations are censoring us. They're taking away our free speech rights on a very powerful media. They're removing us from what is now the public square. And we saw the Daily Stormer and Stormfront, two despicable Nazi websites, Ku Klux. I mean, no one's defending this. But they can no longer find a web server to host their opinions. Now, if you're trying to encourage violence or justify violence, I have no problem with that. But if all you are spewing is venomous opinions, then I have a problem with corporations taking you out of the public square of the internet, because what we're seeing is the media conflating, ever expanding the definition of hate speech, ever expanding the definition of the alt-right just to include all conservatives. So between these fascist corporations and Antifa, the media has taken a very strident and militant approach towards their coverage and towards their enemies on the right.
You know, it really is true. They pull this trick where everybody on the right is a Nazi, but nobody on the left is connected to Antifa. You know, I mean, Antifa is just, right, they're just extremists. They have nothing to do with everybody else. But in fact, everybody on the right disowns the Nazis, everybody virtually, and there are not that many of them, whereas Antifa is pretty powerful, and nobody except Nancy Pelosi, God bless her, Nancy Pelosi will denounce them. Nobody will. You know, let me bring up this other thing. You know, I had this kind of weird insight the other day. I wrote this book years ago, True Crime, you know, that was made into a movie, and about this reporter who's a terrible person. And the fact that he's a terrible person allows him to see through the strangling PC narrative to the truth. I mean, it's in part of his nasty personality that allows him to do that. And I compared him to Donald Trump. I think that one of the things about Donald Trump is that he's not constrained by some of the things that constrain the rest of us not to appear indecent, not to even worry about appearing racist. I don't think Donald Trump is a racist, but he doesn't even worry about whether he appears that way or not, where a lot of people do, and a lot of Republicans have been essentially turned into eunuchs by their fear of the media branding them racist. Is there, and I think this is a place where the Daily Wire, I can see where it may have been a constraint on you, is there a moral hazard in attaching yourself to this guy? You know, you're going back to work for Steve Bannon, who, as we all know, is Sauron. the way he's portrayed in the press, he's basically assembling an army of orcs to take over Middle Earth. But he has, the thing about Bannon, I don't believe at all that he's a racist or anything like that, but he has given a voice to people like Milo Yiannopoulos and his group who play at racism. They think it's ironic, they think it's cute, they think it's funny. Is there any kind of moral hazard for you, who I know for a fact are not a racist, attaching yourself to a site that plays fast and loose with stuff like that?
Well, I just read this biography of Lenny Bruce, the comedian, who was just a degenerate. I mean, a total drug addict, a total loser, a user, a scumbag. But there's no way the left would allow him to work today because of his racial, the things he said about, he satirized everyone. And I'm not concerned about the words people use. Now, there are some words, yes, there are probably two words. One is the N-word, and the other one is the word fag. I don't say the F-word because I don't want anybody to confuse me with prude. there are certain words you can't use. But I don't concern myself with words. I concern myself with intent. And Lenny Bruce was not a racist. He was a scumbag, a human being, but he wasn't a racist. And Milo's not a racist. Milo's a gay Jew.
Right.
And I think that provocation, like what Lenny Bruce did and what Milo do, I think sticking it to the squares, I think pushing the boundaries of what we can say and what we can't say is a righteous message. Now, sometimes people could go too far, but that doesn't make them evil. But I would much rather be on that pirate ship than standing around with Mitt Romney and John McCain saying that Antifa is somehow the modern day version of the D-Day, that these are good people, that these are righteous people. So I think it's good to stick it to the squares. I think it's good to go after pieties on the right and the left. And I'm going to judge people by their intent. I'm not going to judge them by the things that they say. And I understand being a provocateur. I think provocateurs are very important. They were important in the 60s. They were important in the 50s to break the constraints so that people could enjoy the First Amendment. And today they're important because instead of the government restricting our speech, you have the establishment, you have the media, and you have politicians, and you have corporations censoring us. And I think that's a righteous cause right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think the shattering of this smothering narrative that the left has created, where anything we say can be construed as racism. I mean, even if you criticize a president and he happens to be a black president, suddenly you're a racist, because, it has to be shattered, and possibly it takes the kind of extreme measures that people like this are willing to use. I got to say, I'm sorry to see you go, pal. I really am. You're one of the most honest and one of the best observers of the media around. Breitbart is lucky to have you. I hope you'll continue to come on the show, though, because I love talking to you. So I hope you'll keep coming on. Tell Bannon.
You need to be corrected.
Okay. Tell Bannon he should come on and let me interview.
I'll do that.
That didn't sound that enthusiastic. All right, John Nolte, the Noltonator. You can read him over at Breitbart. He is one of the best. Thanks a lot, John.
Thanks, buddy.
Now, you may have wondered, part of that interview, if you were watching, I was looking in the wrong direction, and that was because I didn't wear my Hubble contact lenses, and I didn't know where the camera was. And the thing about Hubble contact lenses, first of all, If you wear contact lenses, you know, they can be, it can be a pain in the neck. They run out. You have to run down and get them all the time. And, you know, you need them. And plus, they're expensive. You know, like four companies, until Hubble came along, four companies controlled like 97% of the market. And because they were expensive, people would leave them in when they were supposed to be worn for a single day, and they get dry, and it's really not good for you. But now you can get them from Hubble.com, and they are, you can get them for 60 contacts for $30, which means $1 a day. That's half the price of the other brands. So if you go to HubbleContacts.com, you get your first 2 weeks free. That's the first thing. You get first 2 weeks free, plus every single day you get them for less, 60 contacts for $30. These are quality daily lenses for half the price of the other guys. They sell directly to you, so they don't have to offer contacts. You know, so that's what makes it so cheap. And they can even send you to an optometrist if you need to get a new prescription. Go to HubbleContacts.com to get your first 2 weeks of lenses for free. That's 15 pair of lenses for free. You can't beat the deal. Hubble is offering my listeners 2 weeks of free contacts. HubbleContacts.com. You will get 20/20 vision for half the price. Because most places, if you pay half the price, you get 10/10 vision, which isn't going to do you any good at all. But it's HubbleContacts.com. Very comfortable contacts, very, very inexpensive. You know, I have to mention, we're going to run out of time, so I want to do this a little quickly, but Nolte was talking about the censorship, this move towards censorship. And one of the big ones has been Google and YouTube, which are rerouting searches. They're working with leftist organizations like the Southern Poverty Law Center. I mean, it's a hate group, basically, that does its hate by labeling other people hate groups. That's how they do it. And they've been rerouting searches so that if you search for, you know, Prager, who's been having Dennis Prager is having a hard time getting his PragerU videos, you know, monetized and up there. They're banning them and stuff like this, and it's nuts. So Google, right, funds all these think tanks, and they fund these think tanks to have an effect, obviously, on legislation so that they, as this monster corporation, can affect the law. I mean, this is all corporations do this, right? So the New America Foundation has received more than $20 million from Google and its parent company's executive chairman, Eric Schmidt, and his family's foundation since the think tank's founding in 1999. They've gotten over $21 million. And the money helped to establish this New America Foundation as an elite voice. I'm reading from the New York Times, a former newspaper, as an elite voice in policy debates on the American left, and it helped Google shape these leftist debates. So not that long ago, the European Union had a penalty, fined Google for being a monopoly and for practicing monopolistic practices. And one of the guys in a think, in a, one of the bureaus of this think tank, the New American Foundation, Barry Lynn, his name was, said, good for them. Good for them. That was the right thing to do. It is a, you know, it is a monopoly, and the European Union was right to fine them. Barry Lynn is now out of a job. And the thing you have to know about this, by the way, is Lynn's part of this foundation is completely self-funded. He did not fund through Google, but Google's power over the overarching organization, the New America Foundation. It's kind of a creepy name to begin with. The new, do we need a New America? I thought the old one was kind of good. But anyway, the New America Foundation was taking so much money from Google that when they got angry at Barry Lynn, out Lynn went. And here he is explaining why he said what he said.
It was actually support for a decision that was aimed at ensuring that we have a political economy in the United States and Europe that is diverse and which power is not concentrated. That's what the decision was about. Our unit has been focusing on ensuring that there is going to be a, you know, that we're not going to see a massive concentration of power over the political economy of the United States in the hands of a few private individuals. That's what we've been doing for 15 years. That's what we will continue to do. That is what apparently, from as far as we can tell, that's what Google moved to suppress.
So, you know, this is something, you know, over at The Daily Caller, Luke Schwartz, an attorney, wrote a an opinion piece called Time for Republicans to Take Google's Antitrust Abuses Seriously. And he says, over the last few weeks, conservatives railed against Google and other big tech companies for their left-wing bias. This has led to many, including Ann Coulter, Steve Bannon, and Tucker Carlson, to advocate regulating Google as a natural monopoly. While Google should not face antitrust scrutiny from Republicans because of its liberal political positions, it also shouldn't receive a free pass for anti-competitive conduct by the Democrats for the same reason. In fact, Google's strong ties with the Obama administration may have prompted the Federal Trade Commission to drop an investigation into search result manipulation in 2012. Republicans do not owe Google special treatment and should revisit the investigation into the monopoly's manipulation of its search results. You know, I agree, and because of that, you probably won't be able to watch this on YouTube, but I think it really is serious. I mean, this is the way, you know, some companies become so big that they are almost quasi-governmental agencies, and that is why people break them up, and that is why historically they've been broken up. If they're going to manipulate our opinions, if they're going to prevent us from getting the information we need to have informed opinions, from choosing our sides, not choosing what Google thinks our side should be, they should be broken up. They should be stopped. I mean, this really is an abuse of freedom of speech. All right, stuff I like. A lot of times on the mailbag, I get a lot of theological questions, religious questions, and all this. And I want to point you to a book that I just read recently that is very short. I won't say that it's an easy read. It's not an easy read, but it's not like a crushingly difficult read. It's called The Consolations of Philosophy by Boethius. Now, there's a modern book that somebody wrote called The Consolations of Philosophy, named after this book. But you want to get the ancient one by Boethius. Boethius was a politician and philosopher at the end of the Roman Empire. He served under one of the barbarian kings who threw the last Western emperor out. He rose to a very high level in the administration, and then he got nailed. He got, according to him, according to Boethius, he was wrongly convicted, and he was sentenced to death. And while he was waiting for death, and he was ultimately tortured and killed. While he was waiting for death, he wrote this book, Consolations of Philosophy. It's about 130 pages long, in which he has an imaginary conversation with philosophy herself. And she explains why he should not allow himself to be brought down by the fact that his fortune has run out. And it's not where the term Wheel of Fortune comes from. That comes from Pat Sajak. No, that it was older than Boethius, but it is where it was popularized. The Consolations of Philosophy became possibly the most influential book in the Middle Ages. Certainly influenced Chaucer and his Canterbury Tales, but it has been seen throughout the West. It's said to have influenced J.R.R. Tolkien in writing Lord of the Rings. And basically the thumbnail sketch is philosophy takes all the things that people desire, wealth and pleasure and fame and honor and glory, and tries to point out and show that these are all good things that are dead because they have been cut away from the one good thing, which is God, and that in looking for these things, you are really looking for God. And it kind of really explains this and why philosophy thinks so, and this is something that philosophers from Plato and, you know, and Aristotle have thought, and basically Boethius was a translator of Aristotle. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. I have to say that it totally shifted my point of view. In very brief terms, like I said, it's not an easy read, but it's not a hard read either, and it completely changed the way I look at philosophy and at religion. Next week, we've got Sebastian Gorka, we've got Victor Davis Hanson, a good lineup of guests, but it's a long Clavenless weekend, so you're probably not going to survive. So, it just as you go, you know, I just want you to know that it's going to be a great week next week. So fight on to get through the Clavenless weekend. We will be here on Monday. I'm Andrew Claven. This is The Andrew Claven Show, and we'll end with Little Texas.
God bless Texas.